and welcome to Drinking on the Last Frontier. This is your host, Bill Howell, back here again, sitting in the chair live on KDLL, listener-supported public radio for the Kenai Peninsula. As always, we want to say thanks to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. And we're here to encourage you to call and donate to KDLL, our public radio station. You can call 907-513-1996 to donate, or you can donate online. And if you've already donated, you can call that number and ask questions, because I've got one of my best buddies here, Zach Henry from St. Elias Brewing Company. We're here to talk beer and answer your beer questions. How you doing today, Zach?
I'm doing great, Bill.
So appreciate you being here. And before we get started with anything else, the first thing I have to say is congratulations to St. Elias Brewing Company. This month is your 18th anniversary in business. It's been 18 years, buddy.
Thanks. Yeah, it went by pretty fast.
Yeah, like the blink of an eye, it seems like. So anyway, thanks for coming in. We really appreciate it.
Sure.
So, Jenny, you've got some questions for us already, I understand.
I do, and a couple orders of business as well. I want to thank Don and Robert Stiver, Dottie Hill, and James Hornstein for donating during the last break. We very much appreciate the support. We would love to thank you for the support as well. We've got Jake, we've got Dottie, we've got Larry, we've got a whole crew out there ready to answer the phones, 907-513-1996. Or, of course, the internet is always ready to take your money, kdll.org. And if you want to send in a question for Bill and Zach, you can call that same phone number, 907-513-1996, and we'll take down your question. Or you can send us a comment on Facebook, and we will get those to the Beer Brain Trust. So in no particular order, I'm just going to throw them out. And if you guys have any thoughts, great. If not, we can move on to the next one. Pete wrote in and said he's starting to see more Shandies and Radlers now that it's spring. Thoughts? And do you have any recommendations, if anyone? That seems like a more summer type beer. Is that one you guys are familiar with? And if so, are there any brands or breweries that you would recommend?
Yeah, personally, it's, I don't foresee myself doing something like that, but definitely not opposed to it. Definitely the customers are the ones that demand what I make. So,
well, let's see. As I recall, a Radler is like a lager mixed with a lemonade,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you. I was going to ask. Like,
yeah,
what exactly is
it's a German. It's a German word. Mm-hmm. And then a Shandy is, I'm trying to remember now.
I feel like that's a fruit type, like another lemon related type.
Is it with orange juice? I can't remember
now. Citrusy something.
Yeah, most of those, I mean, yeah, those are definitely summertime drinks. Mm-hmm. Nobody orders a lemonade typically in the depth of winter.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them are something that a place could probably make for you. Again, because it's just a beer mixed with something else. So if that's to your taste, then yeah, you could definitely go for it. I don't know if somebody strolled into St. Elias and said, give me a Radler. Mm-hmm. I guess you guys probably don't have lemonade handy to make one with. So,
Not currently.
if you were in like a regular bar or somebody like that, that had mixers and things like mm-hmm. that, they could probably come up with one.
Yeah, is that like a German thing?
Yeah, the Shandy is British, yeah, and the Radler is German.
Sure.
So I'm trying to remember. My memory isn't grasping
like
what exactly.
Berliner Weiss or something mixed
well,
with lemonade.
Well, Berliner Weiss,
they
would just use like a typical lager, some German mm-hmm. pills or something like that.
More for hot summer days kind
of
thing.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, Berliner Weiss, you would have the Weiss and then mm-hmm. put a little syrup or something mm-hmm. in it to sweeten it a little bit would be kind of the more traditional. Rather than mixing two different drinks, you'd just be kind of like dosing your mm-hmm. your Berliner Weiss. So
I think I would just prefer to make a beer that kind of has the flavor that I'm seeking instead of adding something to
hey,
it.
You're preaching to the choir there, buddy. If it's hot, there's plenty of great sour beers out there. You don't really need to add lemonade to them.
Mm-hmm.
Get yourself a get yourself a nice something sour and refreshing, like Denali's Louisville Slugger, or one of those kind of brews. So, you know, I'm trying to remember, you made some kind of sour browns, but you have never really made like a sour. You done a kettle sour?
I do, yeah. Currently, the Island Girl is a kettle sour. So
okay, yep. So you tart that up a little bit before
get the pH to drop, and then
before you tart it up with your raspberries.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually a good balance. I feel like with fruit beers, you really need that acidity to let the fruit pop. Because without that, it just kind of tastes like a
syrup.
I always kind of describe it as like when I was a kid, like going through the bank with my mom, and they'd send that sucker through, the cheap little sucker, and a lot of the fruit beers nowadays kind of almost taste like that, but without that acidity, it doesn't actually taste like fruit.
Yeah, too sweet.
Agreed.
So, all right, well, we beat that one to death. We got another one for us, Jenny?
Sure. All right, let's see. Diane came across something called a Czech dark lager, and Diane had only heard of or seen, you know, lagers are generally lighter. So what is up with a dark lager?
Well, I can pontificate on this one for a little bit. When lagers were first created, first off, a lager is just a German word for store, and it's brewed with a lager yeast, which is a cold fermenting yeast that works slow because it's at cold temperatures, so it takes a while, so you have to store it, lager it, for several months. And initially, when lagers were first created in Bavaria, they were dark because they did not have the technology to kiln really good light-colored malt. We're talking about the 18th century now, but when we get into the 19th century, technology had advanced. They learned how to make really light-colored malt, so you could make golden-colored beers. And that's why today we associate lagers with being golden color, is because most of the ones we see today are some descendant of the Pilsner that was created in 1842 in what's today the Czech Republic, in the town of Pilsen. So dark lagers are kind of holdouts or holdovers from the older style lagers that were made before we figured out how to make clear golden ones. There's another style of beer out there that's more German than Czech that you'll hear called Schwarzbier, which basically translates as black beer. And it is the same sort of thing. It is a lager. It's brewed with a lager yeast, but it's a dark beer. So anything you want to add to that, Zach?
No, I'm definitely open to making something like that. I've been thinking about that a bit. Like a Schwarz-style beer. I think they tend to typically be really clean and light, and the dark, the malt character is... It's not as roasty as you would
expect.
Yeah,
it's not the good. I think the ones that I like best are not roasty. It's not like you're drinking a Baltic porter or something like that. They're dark, but they don't have the roasty taste to them. Someone who makes a really good one is Sinisher Brewing up in Anchorage. Clark Pell's, though I guess it's not Clark anymore. He and the wife just sold a couple of months ago to the new owners whose names escape me right now, but they make a really good Schwarzbier. So if you find yourself in Anchorage and you want to check out Sinisher, if they have it on, they do one that I would consider to be kind of in the classic style, not roasty, very clean tasting, very, if you close your eyes and tasted it, you wouldn't think, oh, this is a dark beer. You'd think, oh, this is... But when you look at it, it's dark. So, yeah. So there's that one. What else we have?
Well, staying in the dark beer realm, question for Zach. Joe said that he had your new porter this winter. Do you have a new porter this winter?
I actually brought a
can of
it.
We
were actually going to try it on air.
This is perfect. It's almost like we planned it this way. So he loved it and was wondering if you could talk a little about how that was made and
Sure. Yeah, it's like more like a London style porter, or an English style porter. It's about 5.6% ABV, about 30 IBUs. So it's not super bitter, but just enough to balance. But it has a nice kind of toasty, biscuity, chocolatey character. It's
stylistically, I would say it's a brown porter.
Yeah, probably
rather
so.
Rather than a robust?
Probably
yeah.
so.
Yeah. What did you hop it with?
I was trying to remember. I think I may have actually used some kind of untraditional hops like Magnum, okay. which is a German-style hop. It's just a very clean, bittering hop that doesn't give a lot of character, just a nice, clean bitterness.
Yeah. I was wondering if you had used the Fuggles or something from the UK.
Sure.
But you went with Magnum, so...
Yep. Well, I do have a bunch of East Kent Goldings in the freezer just waiting for my next dark beer, so... I do love some of those English hops.
Yeah, like the when we made the Burt Nail.
Mm-hmm.
I think we hopped that with Fuggles and
yep.
East Kents. So.
Yeah, they have a very distinctive earthy character.
Got anything else for us, Jenny?
Well, this isn't in the list, but talking about porters, it occurs to me, you know, Bill, you did that collaboration with Kenai River Brewing, the public radio porter, had during our annual membership meeting in January, but we haven't had you back on the air since then to really talk about how that came about and how that was made. So this might be a good opportunity to share
that
with folks.
Well, I can't take a lot of credit for it other than suggesting that a porter would be a good style. And I think I gave him took a stab at just the parameters that we were looking for as bitterness and strength and things like that. But it's so most of the credit goes to the boys at Kenai River. They are the ones that really built the recipe and put it together and everything like that. But and credit where credit is due, the reason we went with the porter is because that's what the board said they wanted, that it was wintertime and they wanted a dark beer. So, and it's hard to rhyme public radio stout. So public radio porter sounded like a better choice. But, yeah, I thought it turned out quite good. Again, it's a little roastier than this porter that we're having right mm-hmm. now. But, you know, I think it turned out pretty good, and it seemed to be fairly popular. So
I think it's still on tap there, too, if anybody wants to give it a try.
I don't remember if it was on the last time I was in Kenai River, but it could well be. And I know they're still kind of working on trying to get the label approved at some point so we can get it on a can and people can take it home in cans. But, yeah, swing by Kenai River if it's not on. Ask for it.
It's definitely
We want some more.
It's definitely an awesome style of beer that you don't really see as much anymore. It seemed like, you know, like maybe 20 years ago, you'd see a lot of porters out on the market. But nowadays, I think the only one I can think of that I see regularly on the shelf is Black Butte Porter, which is from Deschutes.
Deschutes, yeah.
It's a really nice
back
example.
In the day, Anchor
yep.
had a porter.
Yep, Sierra Nevada.
Sierra Nevada had a
mm-hmm.
porter. You know, they... Well, let's face it. Stylistically, over the last few years, IPAs have cannibalized so much of the tap space and shelf space out there mm-hmm. That's available for breweries. I mean, I like a good IPA as well as the next person, but I do tend to feel that we've gone a little too far
yep.
in what's the phrase I want? They've kind of monopolized
mm-hmm.
what the capacity we have.
Sure.
You know, when you walk into a brewery and they have five or six different IPAs on tap, I'm like, you know, this is a little overkill. Mm-hmm. I can do, how about a porter? How about mm-hmm. a stout? How about, I mean, you usually,
yeah.
how many IPAs do you usually have on tap? You always
maybe
have
two.
At least two.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, maybe two.
So, which isn't too bad,
because
mm-hmm. You usually have your flagship Wilwaugh and then maybe something else.
Yep.
But I've walked into breweries and not mm-hmm. here and not in Alaska, but outside where half the beers on tap
yep.
are are IPAs.
Well, and they're making them for a reason. I mean, people are wanting them, and that's kind of when it comes down to it. You got to make what people are wanting, and that's
I know. No matter
what we want.
Well, you know what a man said? Nobody ever went broke underestimating the taste of the American public.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people have gone broke overestimating the taste of the American public. So I'm not sure I take the vox populi, vox dei as a truism.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway. Well, hey, let's remind everybody, we're doing this because we need your money. So call 907-513-1996 or donate at KDLL.org because in case you haven't been paying attention for the last 2 years, we need your money. So let's talk about something else here, Zach.
Okay.
We were talking about the impact of people, of the shifts in the brewing with IPAs and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
What's the impact been to your business of the tariffs and fuel costs, everything like that? I mean,
oh gosh, everything's going up. I mean, freight is off the charts. It seems like every other week it's like another price increase. You know, aluminum cans, ingredients. Most of what we order comes from Germany, you know, England, Belgium. So definitely seeing an increase. It's tough.
Yeah, I could imagine. And that kind of segues into what we've been seeing lately with consolidation in the mm-hmm. breweries stuff. I don't know if our average listener out there knows, but it's been well known in the craft beer community for several months that Midnight Sun Brewing Company is basically going out of business. They've been around since 1995, I believe. This would be their 31st anniversary this month. And they are selling all of their brands to Denali Brewing Company. And they're closing up their brewery in Anchorage and selling all their equipment. So that is one of the major stalwarts of the last three decades of brewing in Alaska, and they are closing up shop.
Yeah, so, it's heartbreaking.
Hopefully their beers will still be available, like I said, that Denali will continue to brew them. But I was pretty taken aback when I heard it.
Same, so. Yep. Landmark brewery, can't imagine them not being there.
Yeah, it's kind of like Anchor Steam going away.
Yeah.
Anchor Brewing.
Yeah, you know? Rogue.
Rogue's another one. So, this is it's Darwin days, man. This is going to be survival of the fittest around here for a while yet.
Yep.
So.
Well, people are still drinking beer, though.
Well, that's the good news. People are still drinking beer.
Yeah, there's definitely been a shift. A lot of people are thinking a little more health conscious and, you know, going for the seltzers and the lower calorie drinks and the ready to drink, mixed cocktails and things like that. But I still think there's a place for beer. And I think the one thing beer has going for it that our ready to drink, cocktails don't is beer is actually, it's fairly healthy for you. There's a lot of vitamins in it. There's a lot of B vitamins. The yeast is good for your stomach biome. I feel like it's actually like a nutritional, source compared to, drinking something that just has like vodka added to it.
I've frequently reported on the fact that I think there's definitely health benefits to consuming beer in moderation, mm-hmm. like everything else.
Yep.
In moderation, there's definite benefits from it. So, and that doesn't even mention the social aspect, because as more and more studies are showing, it's the thing that'll really kill you is social isolation.
True.
Better, as my old man used to say, I never see an ambulance pull up to the bar because a drunk fell off a bar stool and died. He says they seem to be pulling up to the gym all the time for people with heart attacks and stuff. So, anyway. Take that for what it's worth.
I like that.
So we actually have a beer health-related question.
Sure, shoot.
Oh, no.
Okay, have you ever heard of probiotic beer?
Mm.
Dan was traveling, and he came across Brewworks is the brewer. Right. Yeah. Red Billion Probiotic Raspberry Sour. You have any idea what that is
about?
Sounds
like a mix of kombucha with beer or something like that.
Could be. So, I mean, probiotic to me would imply that it's got lactobacillus in it, you would think?
I suppose. I mean, I would think that beer in general, as long as it's not, you know, pasteurized or, you know, filtered down to nothing, that it's somewhat probiotic. I mean, your stomach.
Yeah. It's still alive.
Yeah.
Or if it's not, like you say, if it hasn't been pasteurized. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure how brewer's yeasts fit into the quote, healthy biome.
Yeah.
In your gut.
But, I know it's part of, like, kombucha. You know, they say the SCOBY, the
right,
symbiotic culture
of
bacteria and yeast.
That's got bacteria in it, mm-hmm. too. And I would mm-hmm. see, like I said, like lactobacillus, I know they say mm-hmm. is good.
Sure.
You eat fermented foods and things like that. Live
sauerkraut.
Kimchi, stuff that's still a live culture. That's good for you. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I'd say that's interesting. I'm not sure that would be my first choice to make sure that I got gut health. I'd rather eat some pickles or, mm-hmm. like you say, sauerkraut or kimchi or something like that rather mm-hmm. than drink a beer. But okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. It says it's apparently a kettle sour, so I don't know if there's something in the sour process that would, like, preserve.
But typically they've killed a lactobacillus before you do as part of that process. So I'm not sure what they put in it to make it probiotic. Though I did read an article where a guy has developed a yeast that would that acts as a vaccine. It's by no means FDA approved, but he actually brewed it and tested it on himself. But it's a genetic engineered vaccine that is delivered via beer.
Weird.
I think. I can't remember all the details, but yeah, he was looking for a better, easier way to
than a needle,
right? And if instead you could create a special yeast that when it brewed a beer, it would
kind of like
what they did with the golden rice,
mm-hmm.
where the rice is designed to create more vitamin A,
mm-hmm.
so it would, eating the rice would prevent you from going blind, because in a lot of places in the world, vitamin A deficiency leads to blindness.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember all the details, but I remember reading an article where he had this researcher had, and he was a home brewer too.
Sure.
So, and of course, like I said, it wasn't mm-hmm. FDA approved, but you can do it to yourself without him saying anything. So he had done it and tested on himself and proved that it checked his blood for antibodies, and he had mm-hmm. the antibodies from the vaccine and everything like that. So
it's definitely like interesting times right now with, you know, there's a lot of yeasts that they're making now that they're genetically modifying, and they're taking out certain aspects of the yeast, you know, that, like, there's, people have heard of, like, diacetyl, which is a butterscotch flavor that is kind of a no-no, I guess, for something you don't want in your beer. It can be reduced if you brew it correctly, but they're actually modifying yeasts now where they actually won't even produce that diacetyl, you know.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of other flavors as well that they're able
I think they're also playing with them to get them to produce things that they want.
Sure.
Like insulin. Right. Mm-hmm. So most of the insulin that we use to give to diabetics these days comes from, like, horses.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think. And if they could come up with a way that you could have a yeast that would produce it,
mm-hmm.
where you could make it on an industrial scale so much cheaper,
mm-hmm.
you know, things like that.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's a fascinating, it only tangentially relates to beer.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating what some of these things that they're bioengineering yeast to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, Got another one for us?
I do. I need to do a thank you quickly, though. Okay. It's a passive-aggressive membership donation from my dear friends, the Lockwoods, who apparently do not like my choice of shirt today. So instead of them donating, their dog, Denali, is becoming a renewing member at KDLL. We do, of course, welcome all pet memberships and can send you a pickle bandana for your pet if you want to sign up. Dog, cat, fish, fish, we don't have any, you know, water-resistant bandanas yet. R&D is still working on that. So thank you to Denali Lockwood, and thank you to Harry and Aaron for, I'm sure, operating the phone for the lovely Denali Lockwood. And just a quick reminder that we are raffling off all donors through 4 p.m. today are going to get entered into a raffle for a two-night getaway to the Hope Lake Hideaway, which is just south of Soldotna. It's a very cute cabin right on Hope Lake. Sleeps up to six, canoe included. So if you would like to be entered in that, just give us a call, 907-513-1996. You can also donate online at kdll.org. And while you're on the phone, you can also submit questions to Bill and Zach. General one for Zach, just are there any new trends you're seeing at St. Elias? Is it still all IPAs all the time, or are you noticing any interest in different styles or seasonal styles or anything like that?
Yeah, definitely IPAs are pretty huge right now, but yeah, more so I've been brewing recently brewing some more like hazy IPAs or juicy IPAs, which are kind of the trend nowadays. It seems like people are pretty into them. They're a lot less, Bill's giving me like a gag sign here. I actually come to really love them. I at first I was pretty resistant to it, and then I went to visit my daughter up in Boston, and the East Coast is pretty, they're pretty big on that style of beer. So I got to try a bunch of different styles there, and kind of sort of fell in love with them, and so I came back here and started brewing them, and they're definitely a lot they're more focused on hop flavor, where you're adding a ton of hops kind of in the end of the boil and later in the process, maybe dry hopping, focus more on hop flavor and less on bitterness, so they're a lot more drinkable. Like currently I'm actually putting up a beer on today. I do a beer with Houston Morris of Industrial Pumps of Alaska, and we've got a beer, it's called Northern Star IPA, and Northern Star, I guess, is a company that owns Pogo Mines, and so we're always featuring something that, you know, pertains to his business. He does a lot of, like, pump seals, and he's been working with these companies for, like, over 18 years, so we're always, like, kind of featuring a new company, and it's fun for me because I get to experiment, and I feel like even though it's been 18 years brewing, I'm still learning, and that's what makes it so fun for me. It's just super fun to keep trying new stuff and just try to excel and get better.
Okay, now you've had your talk.
Okay.
Now let's fight.
Okay.
Okay. Because I don't find your new, not yours in particular, because obviously sure. I haven't even tried it, but
sure.
New England IPAs in particular, mm-hmm. I do not find them particularly drinkable mm-hmm. in the sense of, well, drinkable is the wrong word. Mm-hmm. I don't find myself ever wanting more than one of those.
Yeah.
Compared to like a classic English style IPA mm-hmm. or even a typical West Coast IPA, mm-hmm. whether it's Sockeye Red
sure.
or From Midnight Sun or any one of those. To me, those are, well, the Brits would say they're Moorish. Mm-hmm. You want to have another one. Mm-hmm. And I find most of the New England juicy fruit IPAs mm-hmm. that I've ever had, those things are so overwhelming mm-hmm. that if you make it through one, you're not about to say, yeah, sure, give me another one of those. They yeah. just, to me, they just overwhelm the palate. I don't know what you think.
I think what they're doing is...
Can you ever drink two of those in a row?
I can.
okay.
That sounds like a flex.
yeah. I think what they're doing, though, is actually, like, drawing in people that wouldn't normally drink an IPA because they don't... There's a lot of people that don't like the bitterness in beer in general, and I think they're drawing in people that are, like, lighter beer drinkers into the IPA world. So I think in that aspect, they're kind of a good thing.
Well, I mean, I know you got to give people what they want, but like I said, I find them, to me, I don't know. I guess it's personal preference. That super juicy, super fruity, mm-hmm. super, you know.
Files. And
it's just a, well, yeah, it's just a really overwhelming flavor. And it's not, to me, the sort of thing that I would want to have a second one of. Like a port, like this mm-hmm. porter we're drinking right
yeah.
now.
Mm-hmm.
We could finish this and I could have another one,
right.
you know, right away. Or your typical
mm-hmm.
British bitter or pale ale or even a West Coast IPA mm-hmm. if it wasn't a double or something like that, if it was just kind of a regular IPA,
sure.
I could see myself having another one. But one of the really heavy duty,
sure.
you know, really, really, like I said, juicy fruit,
mm-hmm.
tropical fruit.
Yeah. Well, that's the cool thing about having a, I guess, like in our brew pub, I try to have a really wide array of different beer styles that will appeal. Like, you're going to find something that you like. And so if you're not into that, that's fine. You can drink the porter. Yeah. But I think
that's why I don't like the fact that so many places,
uh-huh.
they'll have six IPAs on.
Sure.
You
sure.
only have two,
yeah.
right? So you have other choices. Yeah. But some of these places you go into,
yeah.
it's like, do you want this IPA or you want that IPA or you want this other IPA or
mm-hmm.
you want this IPA, you know?
I think it's cool because, like, with, yeah. I don't know, the thing that it's done for me is it's allowed me to look at hops a little bit differently because I feel like I'm getting so many different flavors out of hops that I never had been able to achieve before. And there's all these new hop varieties that are coming out constantly, and they're all very different. Like, some can kick out like pineapple flavors, and some can, you know, there's you know, piney flavors, and there's just a huge array. And I feel like messing with different combinations of hops in the finish of the beer along with different yeast strains can, like, create these really neat, like, tropical flavors that it's kind of made me look at hops in a totally different way, which is fun for me because I'm just learning as I go.
Okay. I'm still going to stick to my West Coast IPA.
That's fine.
I try the other ones, but like I said, I haven't found one yet that I would like, man, yeah, I want to get a six pack of that.
Yeah.
Because I want to drink, you know, I want to have two or three of those tonight or whatever. They just, to me, they're just super,
sure.
super overwhelming. So, but hey, like you say, to each his own.
Yep.
We got any other questions, Jenny?
We do. So a question for Zach.
Mm-hmm.
Are you planning anything special for Kenai Peninsula Beer Festival?
Whew. Gosh, I haven't even thought that far out. I'm like
and
barely.
It's on the 20th. It's going to be on the 25th of July this year.
That's right.
If I recall
yeah,
correctly.
Earlier during Progress Days. Is that right?
Well, it's going to probably be around Progress
that's
Days. It's
going to
be in the, and it'll be in the park again, I assume,
mm-hmm.
since it was last year. So, yeah.
Yeah, they have the, like, the connoisseur, or maybe they don't do the connoisseur
hour
anymore.
No, they got rid of that last year. I don't think they're going to do that anymore.
Yeah, I honestly don't think, I can't think that far ahead, I guess. I'm, like, barely, like, keeping
I hate to break
above
it to
water.
You, it's not that far ahead at this
well,
point.
Well, I know, but I'm literally, like, thinking, like, within a week from now,
okay.
like, it's
fair.
It's, yeah. Well, and, I don't know, grand scheme, it's just a one-day deal, and it's, I don't know, to brew a beer specifically for that one
right,
day.
Right.
I don't know. I promise I'll have some good stuff.
Fair enough. Okay. Janice says she's seen the new meadery in Soldotna. So what can you tell her about mead and why don't you often see it on tap in, like, craft breweries?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think your license lets you brew mead, does it?
I don't think so.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
To brew
doesn't
mead,
have hops.
You really need a winery license, is my understanding. So most of your meaderies and are, like, they have a winery license because most meads come in over strength for what is considered typical for
10, 12, 13.
Yeah, I don't know what your... Is there a specification in your license about the maximum you can produce? There isn't.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not actually completely sure. I see other breweries that are kicking out like 20 percenters, and I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I could brew something that big. That's a big, big beer.
Yeah. Well, anyway, typically a meadery would have a different license, so that's why you don't usually see meads on at regular craft breweries unless it's like something they brought in from outside.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, meads just definitionally are made from honey primarily as their primary fermentable.
Sugar.
They use honey, whereas for a brewery, it would be some form of grain, malted grain, wheat, barley, that sort of thing. I have been to the Arctic Buzz Meadery in Soldotna, though just once, and they seem to have a fairly decent selection when I was in there, maybe half a dozen different ones, mostly made with some sort of a fruit addition. So, again, for somebody who likes fruit beers and that sort of thing, on the sweeter side, that might be a nice place to check out. So, I don't know. Have you ever made a mead, either as a homebrew or as a...
I
know for homebrew, it takes a long time.
It does.
Honey is a very slow fermenter, so you really have to be willing to let it sit around for several months as opposed to several weeks for regular beer.
Yep. Yeah, no, I have made mead before as a homebrewer, but I can't say I'm proficient with it.
Yeah. So anyway, but there is a new one, Arctic Buzz Meadery by kind of by Soldotna Creek Park. So if you're curious, stop in and check them out. So give their stuff a try. That's the best way, is to give it a try. So there was two down. Are they both the ones down in
Homer?
Homer still open?
I don't know. I think there might only be one down there now.
Okay, because there was the Nordic kind of one, and then there was another one.
Yeah, Celestial was one at one point. And,
yeah. But, well, back in the day, it was Ring of Fire.
Ring of Fire,
down
yeah.
there, but then they closed, so... I know Denali is doing meads also, Denali Brewing Company, because they got all the licenses, man. They got
cider.
The distillery license and the meadery license, the winery license, the brewing license. So they make everything, but I don't know about how many others there are. So, speaking of licensing... Have you noticed anything change for you with the new regs that finally went into effect? Has it simplified your operation at all? Made it any differences for you? I know you could theoretically distribute now if you wanted to, but
no notable great changes, but I guess it gives us the ability to distribute if we wanted to, but we're not really set up for mass distribution, you know, because you get into that market and it's a volume thing, and we're just not geared for that, which I'm perfectly happy doing, you know, just making beer for in-house and then, you know, canning and selling directly out of our brewery, and I think we're pretty content, you know.
Okay. The brewery as bakery model, as I've said many times, so sell it all over your counter and capture all the margins, buddy.
Yep.
So,
hey, Bill, on that topic before you leave it, have you heard anything more about the lawsuit that was challenging, like the number of events you could have and all of that? What's going
there
on with
was
that?
The judge did rule in that, and the judge ruled in favor of the breweries and wineries and the three different organs.
Maybe give us like a 10,000-foot summary of what was going on.
Yeah, well, if you've listened to me before, you probably heard me rant about that I thought it was BS that the regs that the brewery tap rooms have to operate under prohibits them having any form of entertainment. And the state of Alaska defines entertainment quite broadly to include if I want to sit there and play solitaire with a deck of cards that I brought in myself, that's considered to be entertainment, and it would be a violation of their license. That's why we don't have book clubs or cribbage tournaments or darts or televisions or any of those sorts of things in brewery tap rooms, unless, of course, the brewery's gone out and bought themselves a dispensary license, which basically is a full bar license, whether they are serving. So, for example, if you go over to Naptown Brewing in Sterling, they have a full liquor license, a full dispensary license. So they can do anything they want. They don't actually serve hard liquor, but they
they actually do.
They started now.
I think they've got some whiskey at
they
least.
Do.
Oh, they do now. Okay. Yeah. Well, they didn't, but they initially got the license, again, so they wouldn't be limited by all these rules and regs that are on brewery tap rooms. So when these new regulations went into effect a couple of years ago, one of the little sops that they threw to the breweries was that they could apply for a special event permit four times a year to have live music. Let's say if Zach wanted to celebrate his 18th anniversary here, he could go to the state hat in hand and say, please, sir, may I have a special events permit so that on one particular day I could have a band come in and play to celebrate my anniversary. They put that in that you could do that four times a year. Well, a couple of years ago, a lawsuit was filed, and the three plaintiffs were Grace Ridge Brewing Company out of Homer, a winery, and a meadery. I do not remember the winery and the meadery's name, but they filed a lawsuit saying that this limit was unconstitutional because it was infringing on their First Amendment rights. So they found a law firm on the West Coast, I think, that was willing to take it on pro bono. They sued the state, and I believe it was last summer or last fall, the judge made a ruling, and the judge ruled in favor of the them. And what the judge said was, you cannot bar live performances, in my understanding, because that is that performer's First Amendment right to get up and play music or do stand-up or tell jokes or sing a song or whatever they want to do. That's their personal expression. Now, the state can still bar television sets, dart tournaments, cribbage tournaments, all this other sort of stuff, but they couldn't prohibit live performances. As far as I've heard, the state did not appeal it, so I think this stands. I actually want to do a little more research about this myself and maybe get a Substack post up on my new Substack. Check it out, the Bill's Howell Substack. About this, but I think that's where it currently stands. Okay. So a brewery tap room could have a live performance now without going to the state and saying, Mother, may I, and will this will count against my four per year.
So. Zach, you've certainly had music at St. Elias, St. Elias in the past. Is that just something you've... you still, or did you steer away from that? It wasn't a licensing reason.
No, we kind of steered away from it. I mean, we didn't really build the place, I guess, to be able to accommodate.
Yeah, you don't have like a great, like, this is the stage area.
Yeah.
And you were kind of before, because you were under a brew pub license, which was a little different than the brewery tap room license, right? You were more like a restaurant eating place.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because again, if you were a restaurant eating place license, what people otherwise call a beer wine license, you didn't have these restrictions on you. Mm-hmm. It was only the brewery tap rooms that were being prohibited from doing this.
Yep.
So, yeah. So, again, it's all built around, driven by kind of the silliness of some of our liquor regulations and liquor laws in Alaska. And we only have 15 minutes left, so you don't want to hear me go on for an hour about how screwed up we are compared to other states in the union. I just got back a couple of months ago from Maine, where they do things completely different and much, much better than we do up here when it comes to, like, liquor licensing and supporting breweries and stuff like that. We could learn a lot of lessons from them, but like so many things in Alaska, it would take a bunch of money to fix it, and nobody's going to spend any money to fix it. So leave it there. Have we got any other questions?
We got a couple more.
Sure.
I don't know if this is a style question or a technology question or what exactly, but nitro beers, like a like a Guinness on tap, you know, where you get like the big head on there. Is that only dark beers? And if so, why? Can you? Has there ever been like a nitro lager or something?
Boddington's is one that comes to mind.
Yeah, Boddington's out of the UK.
Cream ale.
Cream ale. They, I think they're canned ones were nitro. I don't know if they're on tap. Were they cast or were they nitro? I don't remember. But
I know you can buy it in the cans with the little widget
with
in there.
With a little widget, yeah. I know
and
that
it gives
one.
It a very creamy
but, I mean, if
kind
you,
of...
if you walk into a Boddington's pub, how would it be served? I don't know.
Sure.
But basically, you know, nitro, something is on nitro. They're attempting to change the carbonation, the way that the carbonation presents, because, and correct me if I'm wrong when I say any of this sort of stuff, the nitrogen tends to generate smaller bubbles than carbon, the standard carbon dioxide carbonation. So it tends to give a creamier feel, mouthfeel to it, and a really dense little head because, again, it's smaller bubbles. Is that
sure? Yeah, and I mean, similar to a Guinness, I mean, really, it's almost flat. Like when you drink it, there's just the slightest bit of like carbonation, you know, carbonic acid bite there, but it's mainly the nitrogen that gives it that real creaminess. And it's fine for, you know, if you're going to get a pint of it, but if you're going to fill a growler or something of that, it's going to be horrible when you get home. It's going to taste like flat beer.
Yeah. But,
so yeah. Why do you mostly just see that with dark beers then and not like a... like a Hefeweizen or something. I'm trying to think of what a weird nitro light beer would be. But is that just like a style thing? You
seems
just don't
like
do it?
It goes better, or? I guess, with darker beers. Because
yeah, well, I know it originated by Guinness.
Yeah.
Because they were looking for a way, back in the day, Guinness was actually made by mixing two different kinds of beer.
Oh.
They had high kegs and low kegs that had different levels of carbonation in them, and the one of them was aged longer, so it was kind of like stale beer, and they would mix them when you poured a Guinness. But that's got obviously that has a lot of complexity to it. So they were looking for a way that they could make Guinness like other beers, in the sense that it would just be one keg, but without changing the feel, and that's where they came up with using the nitrogen in the first place.
Oh.
So everybody else was copying Guinness, which is probably why it's been predominantly dark beers.
Yeah,
I don't know that you would get much advantage to like using it to make an IPA or something like that.
Yeah, almost. Yeah,
and you would probably lose a lot of the flavor too.
I think so too. Yeah, because the CO2 tends to kind of carry some of those aromas up.
Yeah,
as it's nucleating.
You know, the aromas. I mean, Guinness doesn't have like a super strong aroma compared to IPAs and things like that.
It's an aesthetic thing as well. It just looks better.
Right, the way it should. You want it to see that really dense, creamy head. So that's a good question. I got to do some more research on that to see if there's anybody out there using nitro to do other styles besides.
This could be your shot, Bill. So this could be your solution to your East Coast hazy IPAs that are too flavorful
for you. Oh, they were only on nitro.
You can put them on nitro.
Yeah, okay, there
or
you
cask,
go.
Or cask, maybe.
Yeah, because now it's like, not only is it not specialized enough, nothing is, but they also have to be on nitro. That way, nobody will ever make one, and I will never have to drink it. I could say, well, if somebody would just make a nitro New England IPA, that one I would drink. So, perfect. Perfect.
This could be all you, Bill. This could
That's
be your
me.
Wave
it's
of the future.
Me. What else we got?
So we got two questions left, but just wanted to, in the meantime, remind folks that this is KDLL Spring Membership Drive. We're so appreciative to have Bill and Zach in here live this afternoon. And if this is the kind of local flair that you appreciate on your public radio station, now is an excellent time to let us know with a membership donation. You can give Dottie a call. She's out there answering the phones, 907-513-1996. Or donate online, kdll.org. We have a raffle going until 4 p.m. for a two-night stay at the Hope Lake Hideaway, which is an awesome Airbnb. I think it's also on VRBO if you want to check it out. Lodging on Hope Lake, just south of Soldotna in September. You can set your dates with the cabin owner. So if you got friends coming to town or if you just want a two-night getaway in September, it's absolutely beautiful out there. So any donation up until 4 p.m. will enter you in that raffle. All right, we're getting up to the top of the hour. I've got two questions left for you. One is kind of a trend question, I think. Steve says he's seeing more and more NA beers taking up shelf space. Is that, in fact, a trend you guys are seeing? And if so, are there any NA beers that you guys particularly like?
Well, I'm going to answer the second part first. No.
Well, Bill, this isn't probably up your alley.
Yeah, I don't drink decaf coffee because what's the point? I don't drink diet soda because, let's face it, it's brown water with carbonation. And I don't drink non-alcoholic beer because I think alcohol is a critical part of beer. Now, I know there are people out there who, for whatever reason, can't drink it. So I will defer to you, Mr. Henry, about non-alcoholic beers, if you've got any out there that you like.
Sure. We actually just started selling a couple beers. I personally can't make them because it takes specialized equipment. I believe Kenai River has something like that where they're able
they
to
have
take
a reverse osmosis.
Yep,
where they can squeeze the alcohol out.
Yeah, and they tend to be actually a lot of times more expensive than beer because you're basically making beer and then you're pulling the alcohol out after you've made the beer, and so it's an extra step, which more process there, but. Yeah, so we're selling currently. We've got a Deschutes, like Golden Ale, and we have also Sierra Nevada Trail Pass IPA. And I actually like it. It's not something I would just like choose if I had to choose beer or that, but I think you got to think about the social aspect of it is that, sometimes people come and they want to have a few beers and say they have a couple beers at the bar and they're hanging out with their friends and they're talking and they don't want to have another beer because they've got to drive. And it's a great way to kind of feel like they're drinking a beer, I guess, without the alcohol. And I actually kind of have come to enjoy them on occasion. But yeah, Trail Pass IPA, that's probably one of my favorites. Yeah. I think Sierra Nevada, like pretty much everything they do is pretty well done.
Yeah, I think one of the issues with it is the process. It does tend to, in addition to alcohol, I think it tends to strip a little bit of the flavor elements from them.
It does.
So it's tricky to make one
sure
that tastes as good as, like a real, quote, real IPA
sure.
to get one of those. And as you say, it takes some pretty hefty equipment. I believe the machine that Kenai River has cost $1 million
yep.
to reverse osmosis, take the alcohol out. So, but of course, I give Doug credit there. It's a twofer for him because he takes the alcohol out of that and uses it to make his seltzer.
Sure.
So you've got your non-alcoholic beer for people who don't like alcohol, and then you've got your alcoholic seltzer for people who don't like beer. So
I did see that they are making yeast now or selling yeast that actually can convert the sugars into something other than alcohol. So it actually can be done. I'm not sure how reliably, but
you got enough money, you could put a man on the moon too.
True,
but is it really how you want to spend your money?
Yep,
buying a fancy yeast to make non-alcoholic beer.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, you guys are setting up the segues so good for me today. So one more question, but before that, I wanted to say thank you to Barbara and David Eagle, our latest donor. Thank you very much. You could be on that list, 907-513-1996. So speaking of costs of things, costs of everything is going up these days. So Dave wants to know, what is the most you would pay for a beer and what would it be?
Well, I think for me, and it's definitely a ratcheting scale, because as everything gets more expensive, the most I would pay for a beer goes up. I remember I used to balk at paying $30 for like a bottle of that Deus from Belgium, where they've done the champagne method and the riddling and removed the yeast and everything. I always thought, man, that's a lot of money to pay for a bottle of beer. So I think my top is around $30, and that would be for a big bottle. That would be like for a 750 milliliter, not a 12-ouncer. Because, yeah, there's just so many good beers out there. I have a hard time that. And besides, when I'm feeling insane, there's so many great single malt Scotch whiskeys that I can go out and spend a lot of money on if I want to spend a lot of money on something. So I'm saying $30, and it would have to be something like that Belgian style, where I know that there's a ton of extra craftsmanship and time and everything that went into it. Something like that. I don't know what utopias are going for from Sam Adams these days. They're a couple hundred dollars.
Or a deal with the devil, you know, like people are lining up out the
I'm sorry, man. I wish Gabe all the success in the world, but I will not stand up out in the snow to give him $50 a bottle for his beer, which is a fantastic beer. But
how big a bottle is it?
These days, it's a 375 that he's selling it in, you know.
And that's crazy.
You think back 10 years ago or whatever, when it was, we were getting 750s and you could buy them at the liquor store, and now it's stand in line in the snow to give him $50 for a 375. So, I mean, it's a fantastic beer, but it's beyond my price
at
range.
The end of the day,
what about
it's just
you?
A beer.
What's your top?
Gosh, I don't know. It's hard because I make beer, so I can drink my own. I don't have to. I mean, I do buy beer, but I don't think I would go crazy with spending the whatever it was, $50 a bottle. I don't think it's that. I mean, at the end of the day, it's beer. You know, it's kind of in the same camp as you. Like I would probably spend my money on a really nice single malt Scotch or something, you know, rather than a 375 of beer for the same price.
Yeah, it's again, that's just what it costs these days. But
yeah,
everybody's got their own kind of what's the maximum, what's their pain point. So that's what I'm going to say. $30. That's my pain point. I don't want to pay more than that for a single bottle of beer. So, but anyway. Well, Zach, I appreciate you taking the time out to chat with us today. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Yeah,
and
thank you.
Your listeners out there, if you haven't been by St. Elias lately, you should drop on in and check out some of the new brews that they've got on. Always great. And swing over to Kenai River and get you some Public Radio Porter if you haven't tried that yet. And remember to support this radio station, because that's the only way you're going to have great community programs and be able to listen to guys like us jack our jaws for an hour and talk about beer. So,
well, we appreciate you guys being here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. It is 2 p.m. We've got Hidden Brain coming up next. In the meantime, we would love to hear that phone ringing, 907-513-1996. Or you can always donate online, kdll.org.
Come on, I drink good beer when I'm